And we'll be coming back to that a little bit later as well. I wonder if you have a favourite disciple. You know, one of those 12 specially chosen friends of Jesus who were with him and closely followed him and worked with him and spoke with him for all that time that he was doing his Father God's work on earth. Time is galloping on, so we won't stop and have a little chat about who our favourite disciple might be, but I would make a guess that quite a lot of Christians might choose Peter, Simon Peter, because we can sort of identify with him in many ways. He seems the most human in some ways because of his failings and his short temper, yet his great love for Jesus. Some might choose Andrew, of course, who seems to be a quieter, practical and get on with it sort of person who introduced people to Jesus. Or perhaps John, because John seems a bit more spiritual, doesn't he? So perhaps we'll go for John. Some of us might now struggle to come up with any alternatives, because although there were 12 of them, we don't know very much at all about an awful lot of them. To know to say, oh yes, I like that, that's our favourite. But of course there was James, John's brother. There was, now it gets a bit complicated, there was Bartholomew, who was also known as Nathaniel. And then there was another James, not the first James, this is another James, sometimes known as James the Younger. Then there was Jude, who had another name, and was sometimes called Thaddeus. And then there was Matthew, and guess what? He had another name. He was sometimes called Levi. And there was Philip, who was only called Philip. I don't know why, but there we are. Then there was Simon the Zealot, who today we would probably call Simon the Political Extremist. And then, of course, there was Judas Iscariot. You know, Judas was the one who betrayed Jesus and arranged for him to be arrested just before he was tried and crucified. And finally, there was Thomas, who did also have another name, but it's hardly ever used. He was known as Didymus. And they both mean a twin. So he obviously had a twin, but we don't know anything about Thomas's twin. Now, I've always felt a bit sorry for Thomas, to be honest, so he'd probably be up there on my list of favourite disciples. Because after Judas, he's the one that Christians over the years have tended to look down on a bit. And have given him a slightly insulting nickname of Doubting Thomas. Doubting Thomas. I don't know if he knew about that or not, as that cartoon we're looking at might be mentioning. But he didn't believe, as our story told us, that Jesus had risen from the dead on that first Easter. And I don't think it's fair we call him Doubting Thomas, because in our story today, he wasn't doubtful at all, was he? He was certain. Absolutely certain. He knew what was what. So I think we should call him Certain Thomas, not Doubting Thomas. He was certain that his friends couldn't have seen Jesus in that locked room, because Jesus was dead. They all knew that. Some of them had seen him die. And if he was dead, then he couldn't have come back to see his friends, because, I mean, things like that just don't happen, do they? Things like that just don't happen. Everyone knows that. And so Thomas was certain that his friends were wrong. He didn't know why they were saying it, but he had no doubt at all that they were wrong. He was certain of it. And we're all like that at times, aren't we? We know what's what. We're not gullible or ready to believe the latest internet conspiracy theory or whatever. We know what's true and what's mistaken and wrong. Sometimes. A personal story here. Many years ago, in the 80s, I was helping to run, when I was a primary school teacher, a residential trip. I used to love the residential trips. Fortunately, the children did as well, so we all had a great time. And one year, we were up on the cliffs at Swanage by the great stone globe, which you can see there, and we were sitting around the globe on the benches, having our packed lunch and gazing out to sea. Suddenly, as I was rummaging in my sandwich box, looking for the next sandwich, one of the girls called out, "Mr. Stranks, there's a whale!" "No, there's not. Don't be silly," I said, not even bothering to look up, really, because you do not see whales from the cliffs at Swanage. My next words, of course, were, oh, yes, there is. Now, in fact, it wasn't a whale, but I would forgive her mammal identification at a distance at sea issues. There were three dolphins leaping and jumping out of the water, giving us a great display just for a few seconds before moving off around the bay and out of our sight. And I did, in case you're wondering, apologise to that little girl for not believing her. And now I've been back to that very same spot many, many times. I was trying to work out, it probably goes into the 50 pluses since that day. And I have never, ever seen dolphins there. Because you don't get dolphins or whales off the coast of Dorset visible from the cliffs at Swanage, do you? So if I'd missed seeing those dolphins by a few more seconds, and that's all it would have taken, and if I hadn't looked up almost straight away, I wouldn't have seen them, I wonder if I would have believed her, and all the other children who said, yes, yes, there were three of them there. I don't expect I would have. Because you don't see dolphins off the cliffs at Swanage, do you? Like Thomas, I was certain that the witnesses to the event had somehow got it wrong. They'd seen something else. Things like that just don't happen. I was talking to a little boy who was 8 the other day, and he enjoyed Easter and the Easter eggs and all the rest of it. And I said, what about the story of Jesus and coming back to life at Easter? He said, oh, no, I don't believe that. I said, well, why is that then? Well, dead people don't come back to life, do they? And a lot of people would take that view. Sometimes it's hard to accept the possibility of things we haven't seen or can't see, especially if, like the dolphins or whatever, they aren't in our normal experience and don't fit with what we think we know is the case and what's going to happen. It's hard to decide, yes, I believe that, or no, I don't. And sometimes it's easier to go with no, I don't, because of what it would mean to say, yes, I do believe it. Now, some of you might have found it quite hard to accept the possibility of some of those things we looked at earlier, especially the tortoise with two heads. And there may have been one or two people looking to, has that been photoshopped or computer adapted? Well, I'm assured it hasn't been, but you will have to take my word for it. So even when sometimes we're given visual evidence, we will find reasons not to believe things. So we've got to take people's doubts, if you want to use that word, or certainties that what we're saying isn't the case. We've got to understand that, because we all do it. We all do it at times. We might be like Thomas, having first missed out on seeing the risen Jesus when he appeared to those disciples in that locked upper room. He found it hard to believe. And do you remember what he said to them? I need to see. I need to see. And lots of people today, as you just said, would agree with him. They can't have seen Jesus alive because things like that just don't happen. But in fact, we do, as we've said, believe lots of things that we can't always see. And of course, we also know that Jesus said on another occasion, with mankind, human beings, this is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And that was, in different words, more or less all I could say to that boy who said, Jesus didn't come back to life because those sorts of things don't happen, do they? Of course, in Thomas's story, Jesus did appear again to the disciples when Thomas was there. So he could see. He saw Jesus, and Jesus showed him the proof he'd asked to see before, to be convinced that Jesus really was alive. And he was still certain, Thomas, but this time he was certain that it was Jesus, and that Jesus was alive, and he fell on his knees and worshipped him. Some people I've heard over the years say things like, well, if I'd been around at the time of Jesus and actually been there and experienced him talking and listening to what he had to say and seeing some of the things he did, then I believe then, But now it's all so long ago, and we don't know how accurate the stories about him are of the 2,000 years. Things might have been exaggerated or changed and so on. But if I'd been there and seen it, then, yes, I'd like to believe. Well, although Jesus gave Thomas the proof that he wanted, he went on to say something that's really encouraging to all of us. Because all those years ago, in that upper room facing Thomas, Jesus had in mind people like you and me. That we'd be challenged to believe in him, even though we've never physically, with our eyes, seen him. And he said, "The people who have faith in me without seeing me are the ones who are really blessed." Or to put it another way, if we choose to believe, even though we haven't seen the risen Jesus with our eyes, we're to be congratulated, because our belief makes God very, very happy. And of course, we do have the evidence of those people who did see Jesus to encourage us to believe in him. John even says that's why he wrote his gospel, for that very purpose. And with that evidence and the knowledge that Jesus didn't expect us to have to see him to believe in him, and the knowledge that in other areas of life we don't need to always see to believe, we can be confident that Jesus really is alive today. And St. Paul said in that letter we heard a bit of to the Roman Christians that it is this belief which saves us. Do you remember the words we heard Caroline read? If you confess that Jesus is Lord and believe that God raised him from death, you will be saved. For it's by our faith that we are put right with God. It's by our confession, or our statement of belief, that we are saved. Now, over many years, Christians have set down what we believe about God, his son Jesus, and the Holy Spirit in statements, which are sometimes called creeds. Statements of belief and faith. And we're going to finish off our service shortly, and we're going to sing a hymn now, which is a version of one of those old creeds called the Apostles' Creed, and someone's made it into a hymn. And we're going to sing it together, because it's important to know what we believe and why we believe it and what it means for us. And how believing that saves us. Everyone who calls out on the name of the Lord will be saved. And our reading reminds us that others can't or won't believe in Jesus unless they hear about it. And who are they going to hear about him from? You and me. Unless we try to connect them with Jesus for life, hope, and more.